Welcome to the Next Gen Podcast. Stepping up to the microphone are your hosts, Bryson Wright and Alex Winton. They got next, so let's get to the show.
Hello and welcome in to the Next Gen Podcast here on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Bryson Wright, and I'm joined by my co-host, Alex Winton. And the Grizzly season is over. They lost Game 6. It was really, like, the game in general, it was not a close game. They ended up losing by 40. I saw a lot of people talking about Dylan Brooks got the 40 that he asked for. And, yeah, it was bad. It was the worst game of the season. They had their worst game of the season in the last game of the season. And I think that's the thing that really just leaves, like, a bad taste in your mouth going forward a little bit. Not to say that, like, obviously, like, that they're still a young team. They still got a lot going forward. Everybody has these kind of playoff lumps. All of the best players ever lost playoff series and stuff like that. I think it's not necessarily just they lost the series. I think the way they lost the series is the reason why a lot of people have been really quick to jump on them. And then, as always, you know, you have the trash talk from the rest of the season. So I think all of that kind of just has come together since Game 6. And it's been a lot. And I think going into the exit interviews, which is also what we're going to talk about, the Grizzlies exit interviews after the season, everybody came and talked to the media for every player. There's a lot of big ones. The biggest one being Dylan Brooks, which we'll get to, like, what he's going to be doing or what we think the Grizzlies are going to do about him going forward later. But let's start with Game 6. We're not going to stay on it too long because I know we have other podcasts that have talked about it, like, since then. And there's really not a ton to talk about. Like, they really just came out and they got boat raced. Like, they didn't have the defensive intensity they needed and they couldn't hit shots. The Grizzlies are not going to win games when Ja makes one two-point basket. And then Ja, Jaren, and Bane combine, I think they went 11 for 44 from the field. Like, if that happens, the Grizzlies are not going to win. And it's that simple. And that happened in Game 6 on the road where they've struggled all year, and it didn't work. And then I think the Luke Kennard, not having Luke Kennard and him being ruled out right before the game, that was killer as well. Just because when he was in the game before, it felt like there was so much more spacing for both Ja and Bane, and then there was just none of that in Game 6. So I think that not having Luke Kennard definitely hurt them as well. But that's not the reason they lost. I think they still could have won the game or at least given the Lakers a much better game with the guys they had out there. They didn't have the right mindset, the right intensity. I think it was really more of a mental thing, honestly. Not to say that, you know, because we know the Lakers are not 40 points better than the Grizzlies. Now, without Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, I'll give you, the Lakers, they beat them in the series. The Lakers are the better team right now. But they're not 40 points better of a team, regardless of if Luke Kennard is out there. So that's why I think it goes a little bit into the mental side of it, of, you know, not really being ready for the moment. Like, that, I think that's what I said the day of the game. Like, they showed that they're not ready yet. Now, not to say that they're not ever going to be ready. And I think that's something that anybody who has watched the Grizzlies should know. Even if they might not be ready now, I still think they will be ready in the future. As long as they continue to keep the core guys and they continue to build around them, I think that eventually they're going to get there. But I think we saw with the injuries as well, the injuries did play a part. But just those guys aren't necessarily ready to be true contenders yet. But hopefully this is going to be good for them. They'll come back next season and they'll be ready.
Yeah, tough way to end your season. I said it on Twitter too. I said that's a tough way to end your season for real, for real. I mean, just very tough. Just lose by 40. I kind of agree. I guess they're not mentally ready. Like, I mean, I definitely agree with that. Like, I always say, like, historically, guys their age don't win, like, a lot or get in this situation anyway. So I wasn't tripping off anything if they weren't ready. Now with me saying that, I did expect them to be more ready than to lose in the first round. But I didn't think they were ready ultimately. Even if they made it there, ultimately I felt like they would have fell short because of the inexperience and things of that nature, just not being their best versions of themselves. Like, Ja, Jaren, and Bane are not at the best. What we see from Ja, Jaren, and Bane this year wasn't going to be what their best is, even, like, individually and collectively. So, and, like, for game six, but really just it was just the same story for the whole series. They just couldn't make shots, man. I mean, I break it down very simple, man. I mean, I know now granted, 40 is a lot. So I know it sounds like they didn't try. I felt like they tried because the thing with the Grizzlies, they get good looks, but they literally, like, I was watching that game, they couldn't throw a rock in the ocean. Like, to what Bryson was saying, they chose their worst day to have their worst day. Like, literally, they chose their worst day to have their worst day. Like, 30% from the field is not going to get it done. 31% from three, or 32% from three is not going to get it done. Like, and like you said, your best players, like, literally, your leading scorer was Santi Aldama. He had 16 points.
Shout out Santi, though.
Yeah, shout out Santi. I like Santi. Yeah, shout out Santi. But, like, I mean, just that game six is just bad. And, I mean, they've been bad on the road, so it's no real surprise to me that they lost the game. Maybe in the fashion they lost, but wasn't surprised. I know it's going to be tough, especially when Luke was out, because you just figured out something with Luke the last game, because that game five was great. You know, they were able to figure out, you know, to play Luke, that three-guard lineup with him, John, Bane, and then you have Jaren and I think X, or you could throw it whoever, basically, outside of that, and really just work with that. And even if Luke wasn't getting shots, he was a great decoy, which opened up the floor for everybody else. So missing him was tough, so that made your margin of error even slimmer than it was prior to the series starting, when you didn't have Clark, you didn't have Adams. Like, margin of error just continued to get slimmer. And even Jenkins said after the game six, just your margin of error just continued to get slimmer. And so they couldn't really make up for it. But, yeah, no, it's tough. And, like, in terms of Grizz being talked about as, you know, like, they're not ready, or the jokes, they deserve it. It's gonna be part of the summer cycle. Like, I'm fine in the West. I know that's going to be making its ways around. It's going to be corny because people are going to wear it out. Obviously, they're going to have the Dylan Brooks stuff, which we'll get into later, obviously, about the exit interviews and stuff like that. Like, it's going to happen. Like, when you say all these things and you're the Grizzlies, like, people don't talk about you. Like, even if Jaren, Bane don't really talk, Dylan is part of the Grizzlies. So they're associated with him for this. And so, like, you know, it's just, they're going to be talked about. Like, people already talked about it. But I think Stephen A said something about it, like, earlier today. Like, people are going to say something. Like, people are going to joke with them the whole time. Like, it's part of it. And now it's funny because most people didn't expect us to win the series anyway. Like, most people picked the Lakers in six anyway. So, like, happened anyway, but I guess just in the fashion they lost and what transpired in the series is why they're getting talked about. But I mean it's a tough way to go out, but again, this is not like the end. Like, I do think it's good for them, because as we get into the exit interviews, you'll see that most of these players are very players not only players, but just organization in general is very self-reflective of where they need to be better at and what went wrong, things of that nature. Like they're very understanding of what happened. Which I guess, you know, because people wanted the Grizzlies to quote-unquote get humbled. Like, quote-unquote get humbled. And I guess this is their moment of getting humbled. And I don't know if it's that necessarily, but I just think it's just part of the story. Like, adversity hit. Like, adversity is always going to hit. Like, everything. Like, Zach, even if he didn't say it, progression isn't linear. Like, it's not. Like, and again, you don't want to lose in the first round every year and say, oh, we had a good season. But, like, even then, like, like, it looked like we were on that, oh, we're going to make the second round, then the conference finals, then the final. Like, it doesn't happen that way. Realistically, for most teams, it doesn't happen that way. And so, this is not, like, the end or anything. Like, these guys are 23, the other one's 24. Like, they're going to be fine. But I will say a mindset shift has to happen for the Grizzlies, not just for the players, but for the organization. Because when we talk about this series – I do obviously think when you lost the series is because of injury I'm not saying that's the main thing, but that's part of it. I'm big on blame pines, as y'all know. But a lot of it goes to just the front office and roster construction, because honestly, I mean, you didn't have enough shot makers, which obviously Jaren and Bane got to make shots. Yeah. But when you're playing a guy like Dylan Brooks, 35 minutes, and they're shooting 28-29%, and then you already got another guy you're playing 25 minutes, and Tillman, that's two non-shooters. Your margin of error is very slim. And then when you go to the bench, you only got maybe one playable player in Luke. And I mean, I love Tyus, but like
Tyus had a horrible series. Like, horrible, and I think I said it after game four, is that Tyus is he's been great when he has to step in for Ja, and that's really important, but he just hasn't been that same level of player off the bench this season, just overall. And it showed up in the playoffs. I mean, this is a guy who, when he started, I think he had his best game when he started. He didn't even really have a great game the game he started either. But his best game of the season was the one he started. But the rest of the series, I think he may have been averaging 3 points a game for the rest of the series besides that. So,
yeah.
He's going to have to be better as a non-starter.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Hold on. He averaged 5 points. 4.5. He averaged 4.5 points. And so basically five. But, like, yeah, he wasn't good. And then basically, like, literally you're running Conchar and Roddy and these guys out of here because Grizzlies, for the most part, thought the guys that they over – not overstepped, but they predicted that certain guys were going to make leaps and certain guys were going to stay healthy, and it didn't happen. So you get into this situation where your margin of error is slim, and now it makes you look at your roster. Because I know people judge that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, because, I mean, you look at it. I think one of the things you look at is Zaire was – like, I expected Zaire to take a jump this year, right? They talk about Zaire had this whole summer league thing. They tried to do the same thing, summer league with Zaire Williams. They did it with Desmond Bane. But Zaire Williams is not Desmond Bane. You know, we know this. So everybody's a little bit different. The injury messed up at the beginning of the season. And it goes from last year, even with Dylan Brooks healthy, he was a main rotation player. And this year he didn't get any meaningful minutes in the playoffs. I know he played some garbage time minutes. But I think, like, that really did hinder them a little bit. Not to say that's on Zaire. I mean, you can't really control injuries, but it just felt like he could never really get a rhythm. But also just they didn't need to – like, and I think a lot of people thought about it. Like, I thought they made – like, I think the David Roddy pick was a good pick, but I don't think they needed to go as young as they did. Like, if they had brought in, like, one or two rookies – like, that's one thing. But to bring in five rookies was, like, I think they tried to do too much on the youth side. And it came back to bite them a little bit. So I think that – and I think that even Zach Kleiman, he said that in his postgame. He's like, we shouldn't have doubled down on the youth thing. And I think I'm taking that as he should be shifting his mindset from this year going on. And I think this offseason is where they should be shifting their mindset. Now – I thought they really probably should have shifted it last offseason, but that's neither here nor there. But this year is the one where you're telling, like, Zach Kleiman, you've got big moves to make, whether it's on the trade deadline, whether it's who you're going to give your mid-level exception to out there on the free agent market. But we got to talk about the biggest one. And the biggest one is Dylan Brooks. And me and Alex, if y'all been watching this, I don't know who – I try not to talk about moves after the trade deadline, from like after the trade deadline until the end of the season. I try not to talk about moves because, you know, you got to get through the end of the year. They're going to be on the team. I don't see any reason to talk about trading people after the trade deadline because, I mean, it's not going to happen until the offseason anyway. Save it for stuff like this. But I think it's safe to say I don't think Dylan Brooks is going to be a Memphis Grizzly next year. Just based on his exit interview and a little bit of lack of self-awareness, I feel like, in the exit interview. And I think one of the comments that he made that really stood out to me that made me think he's not coming back was when he said they should have ran more plays for him, but that, you know, that wasn't really in the cards for the team. That sounds like a guy that was frustrated in his role on offense. He said he didn't like just being a 3-and-D guy and stuff like that because, I mean, he didn't do it well either. And I think that's the other thing. But I really think it's going to come down to, man, the whole LeBron thing really is going to hurt him. And just because the way that he talked about poking bears and all of this and then didn't do any media availability in the games they lost, I think all that's going to come back to bite him. We're going to see what happens on the free agent market, but I think the number one thing going into the offseason is going to be who is going to be the replacement for Dylan Brooks going forward. Because I think it's fairly obvious that Dillon Brooks is not going to be on the team next year. Just from the quotes that I've seen. Now, maybe in 3 weeks we're going to come back and it's going to be that I'm wrong and everybody's saying different stuff. But I don't think so. I think this is probably the end of his time as Memphis Grizzly.
Yeah. To touch on Dillon, man, I'm going back too. Since we're talking about Dillon, because that's the first person we're talking about with the eggs interviews. I've been a big proponent of Dillon Brooks in terms of the sense of like that his role on this team, like the role that everybody wants him to be, is not going to happen on this team. The best version of him will not happen on this team. I was always a big proponent of that because he's been enabled to do the certain things with the antics, with the shot selection, in terms of have, you know, coach not really reeling that in and things of that nature, like just the roster construction, because he has to be this guy for that, the team, like all that plays a factor, right? But ultimately, man, with Dillon Brooks, and again, like it's hard for me, even when, I mean, I know we've talked about with the Draymond thing, or I think we might have touched on, but you know what Draymond said about Dillon Brooks in terms of depending on him to win. I think Dillon Brooks can be a solid player, man, but for what this Grizzly team needs, it has to stop. Like, this is the end of the road, or it needs to be the end of the road. Because ever since, if we're dating back to when this era was at Kleiman and John Morant first started, they have a type of player. And I'm talking not just – I mean, Ja fits that, even though he's not the type, but, like, they have a type of players that they want and fit this organization. And just every single time when you think about it, the only player that's been here the longest was here before everybody else was here. So, and essentially, he's always been a guy that stuck out in terms of not being able to fit with what the regime has going on, whatever. But for whatever reason, the move just hasn't happened. With Dillon Brooks, it's like, he can defend and he can make shots sometimes, but like, for this, what this team needs, they said, you know, he's been the heart and soul, this and that. And, you know, people argue that all day, whatever. But, like, at the end of the day, this is a production type of sport. I understand all that other stuff matters, and it does, but production got to matter. And if a guy can't fit into the role that he needs to be for this team and not even really being accepting of that role from based on how it sounded, and not only not being accepting of the role, then to not really have the same mindset as the organization in terms of where they're seeing, because there was a clear disconnect. Because you're talking about with Dillon Brooks, what he said, I don't regret the LeBron comments. They asked him, he said he don't regret the LeBron comments. And you hear Zach Kleiman talk about, we're going to change our approach and how we're talking and things of that nature. Then you hear Taylor Jenkins talk about, hey, we're instead of talk the talk, we're just going to walk the walk. Like, that's what we're going to do. And then on top of that, the only reason Dillon Brooks got mentioned in anybody's press conference was because they asked Zach Kleiman about him. And when they asked Zach Kleiman about him, he gave, like, two short answers. One was like, we'll talk about Dillon later. And the other was basically, he was a good player. He's a competitor. He's good in the community. That tells me the dude is probably gone. And again, I don't know. I'm not in the front office. But if people are smart enough, they read between the lines and just read tone and voices. I would be highly, and I mean highly, surprised if Dillon Brooks is back as a Memphis Grizzly. Because there has to be a replacement. You can't, the bridges burn. And again, I'm not saying the players don't like them. I'm pretty sure the players like them. But for what they do and what they need to do, it's like a handicap. It's the same thing we saw with Jonas Valanciunas. Not in a similar way. Even though Jonas wasn't the same type of player, but you knew you needed to move off Jonas eventually to get something else. Same with Grayson. You had to move off these guys. You knew you had to. And Kleiman knew that, and he did that. So I expect the same. Even if they don't make a necessarily sign and trade deal for Dillon, they'll let him walk. Like, because again, like you were talking about with Dillon, he hurt himself with the LeBron thing. He cost himself a lot of money. Because when you think about
Dillon, I would agree with that. Because it's like, like I said, we don't think the Grizzlies are going to come back. I don't know. I think that if obviously him not playing well is going to be a part of it, but if he had just not played well and it didn't have that whole blow up with LeBron, I think that he probably would have had a higher chance of maybe them finding a sign and trade, or maybe him actually going to another like solid team. But I think it's going to be really hard for teams that are trying to be contenders to go after Dylan after this.
For sure.
After what happened in this series, just because of the way that the NBA is moving to more and more, you know, like you have to have guys that can hit threes consistently. And when you look at the stats from the series, the only guys on the team that hit threes at the level that you would expect them to make would be, well, really, I mean, Ja shot 42%. So he was really one of the best shooters on the team. Santi Aldama was shooting like over 45% from three. But besides that, I mean, Luke Kennard, obviously, he continued to shoot well when he did get to shoot the ball. But outside of that, there was really nobody else that shot the ball well from behind the arc. And that's just not going to work in today's NBA. And I think that that's one of the issues when you have a guy like Ja, who, even though he did shoot the ball well, is known for, you know, driving to the basket. They're going to sell out to stop him from driving. You have to have guys on the wings that can consistently make shots. And having a guy with like Dylan, who in this series couldn't do that, it hurt him a lot. Like, it was a big reason why, like, you go back to game four and in game three, it's like Dylan didn't shoot the ball well in either of those games. And then you go on the defensive end, wasn't able to really get a ton of stops. You know, it's hard to say he's going to lock down LeBron, but it felt like his defense did not outweigh the kind of the weight he was putting on the offense. Kind of, it felt like he weighed the offense down throughout the series when he was on the court, just because they just were leaving him wide open. And I think that's one of the things. I think it might have been also a mental thing. I mean, he's such a dude who's about irrational confidence, basically. And then to just continue to miss shots, I think it really did hurt the way he played for the rest of the series. I mean, like, to the point that where they're leaving him wide open. I don't know if he's overthinking it, because, you know, if you leave him wide open in an empty gym, he'll make every one of them. Like, he's an NBA player. Like, these are shots that he – it's not that he was taking shots. I don't even think he was taking bad shots most of the series. Like, a lot of the shots he was taking were good shots. He just couldn't knock them down. And I think that's going to be an issue. Like, you got to have a guy that can knock down those shots more consistently. But I do want to talk a little bit about who are some guys you would see as a replacement, because it's hard for me. Obviously, like, the number one guy that I would want is going to be Mikal Bridges, but I don't think he's going to get moved. So I think that's going to be hard to get him. Obviously, people have talked about OG Anunoby. That's the guy that everybody was talking about at the trade deadline, but the Raptors decided not to move him. Maybe they'll see what happens at this trade deadline, see if they can make a deal or something like that. And then I think a guy like Jeremy Grant is another guy I've heard a lot of guys kind of throw out. But there's a lot of options, but I think you need just not necessarily a 3-and-D only wing. Like, if you get a guy that can score off the dribble, like, Mikal and OG both have shown the ability to score off the dribble, Mikal to a higher level, of course. But I think that it's really going to come down to, you need somebody who is shooting a higher percentage from three, just so you can open up the floor for guys like Ja, for Bane, and even Jaren. Just open up the floor more. So look at a guy like OG Anunoby, who has shot, I think, over 37-38% from three this last season. Mikal Bridges is a really solid three-point shooter as well. So I think those were two guys. That might be like – those are probably like high-end wish list guys. I don't know. Not to say I'll be disappointed if they get those guys, but those would be like prototypical type of guys you could get. But we'll see what they decide to do. Another thing I will watch out for is every offseason – there's a star that you don't expect to be available that ends up becoming available. And I would watch out for that, because whether it's a guy like Chris Middleton, a guy like Chris Middleton, a guy like Paul George, like, just somebody, there might be somebody out there who you're not expecting to be available now who might become available. And I would expect the Grizzlies to at least make calls on a player like that. Now, based on what they're asking for, I think that when it comes to Ja and Jaren and then Bane probably third, those are the three guys that they aren't going to move. Like, I think those are the three guys that are basically like, they're not going to move unless it was for like Kevin Durant or somebody, like, you know, like, unless you're getting like a superstar level player. But I think when you get outside of that, even if it comes to Zaire, even if it comes to like Jake LaRavia and like some of the younger guys, which is, I'm not saying that I'm out on any of those guys. I think Zaire could still be a really good player. But I think that there would be a possibility that if you have a chance to get a guy that is proven in the league already, that they'd be willing to move on from a guy like Zaire or a guy like LaRavia and guys like that, some of the younger players. I think they would be allowed to do that. I mean, I would say Roddy is probably going to stay. I don't think they're going to move on from Roddy just because he had the better season. But even him, he is a guy that could be thrown into a deal or something like that. But I feel like he's out of all the rookies, I would say Roddy is the number one. I would say he's probably the safest out of anybody. I would expect him to be back. And I think Aldama is going to be back too. No question about that. So I don't think they're going to trade like the entire bench. I don't think this needs to be a complete roster overhaul. I think they definitely do. Like, health is important. I mean, no Steven Adams and Brandon Clark hurt them a lot, like down the stretch of the series and down the stretch of the season in general. So getting Steven Adams back at the beginning of the season, getting Brandon Clark back whenever you do get him back. I know Zach Kleiman said he is ahead of schedule right now, but he's probably not going to be, we know he's not going to be back at the beginning of the season. I'd probably say looking for him maybe 2024, maybe after the new year, start to listen to some updates about Brandon Clark. But you're going to have those guys that are going to be on the team next year as well. I don't think either of those guys are going to get moved on from right now. But then outside of that is when you're going to see if they're going to make some consolidation moves and try to go get another, like a proven role player. I think that's something else, or a proven like six man that can consistently come off the bench and give you 23, 24 minutes and 13 points, you know, something like that. And I think that's probably the type of guys they're going to be looking for.
Yeah. To touch on what you were talking about with Dylan, in terms of the defense and the offense in the series, Dylan's defense became such a, not a factor. Tillman was the better person to guard LeBron. So if that's the case, what purpose do you serve if you're not hitting shots? It's wide open shots. And the way this offense is set up, which I've always said, because, you know, people talk about the Grizzlies half court offense. They talk about shot creation. Personally, for me, it wouldn't hurt to have more shot creation, but they need people that can knock down open shots. Like, because if you ever look at the Grizzlies, like shot quality, all that, they always have great shots. They get open looks. They just don't make them. Like, that's literally the point. Like, they don't make them. And with Dylan Brooks, you're talking about a dude who shot. That's why I'm not surprised by the series, because when you're shooting, literally, he shot the worst he ever shot in his career this year, 39.6%. Shot 32.6% from three. Why am I going to expect for him to just magically turn it on? Especially the year prior, he shot 43% from the field, 30.9% from three. And literally every year, he's gotten worse as a shooter. Like, for the most part, like, since 2019-2020, he's been getting worse. Like, literally, that's been the theme that's been going on. So, for me, it was never a surprise. But with that being said, what you were talking about with the upgrade and things of that nature, and the listeners were here talking about it, obviously, I mean, there's a lot of names you could go with. People are going to talk about Cam Johnson. People are going to talk about Dorian Finney-Smith. People are going to talk about Grant. Personally, for me, I am the person that's OG. I'm big on OG. Like, that's top of my list, easy, because he's basically, again, people are going to hate me, not hate me for this, but he's basically, if you're talking about what Dylan is for this team, and if when he's good, imagine, like, that's what I'm not going to say. Oh, they're not the same player, but OG is the same player you want in that spot. Guy that can knock down shots. He's going to be an All-NBA defender. People need to go watch OG and Manobi. I know he played in Toronto, but, like, he was guarding fives. He's guarding fours. He's basically guarding 1-5, basically, whole year. And he's 16, 17 points per night. And then you're talking about him shooting 37, 38% for three this year. He's been like a 37% shooter the last 3 years since he's been a starter and main rotation guy. The only problem that hurts with him in terms of you're trying to get him is he is an expiring. Then also you're dealing with Masai Ujiri as a GM. And Mr. Masai Ujiri thinks all his players are Kevin Durant. And they need a Kevin Durant return. So with that, that might be an issue depending on how they're viewing their roster and the state of their, you know, their franchise? Are they rebuilding? Are they buying? Are they selling? Like, because they're rebuilding, you probably can get them. But even then, you got to worry about teams like New Orleans. You got to worry about a team like Cleveland, who need the same type of thing. Really, Cleveland, the same type of thing they need, we need. And they might have better options or better assets in their eyes, quote unquote. But, I mean, OG's obviously at the top of my list. Another person that's on my list, obviously, is you're talking about like a role player and things of that nature. He's on the same team as Otto Porter. The only question with him is health, but he's making the same money as Conchar, so that wouldn't be a problem. But Otto Porter's a vet, 29, 30 years old. He hits shots. He plays 3 and 4. Like, it's very simple. Like, you throw him in that Conchar role. Then another name, as you're talking about with a combo guard, Alec Burks. That's another name I like. Really, those three names. Alec Burks is a combo guard. He shot 40% from three the last 3 years. He's averaged 13 points the last like couple of years. Like, all those guys make sense for this team. And it's not hard for me to see them not get those guys. Because like you were talking about with the deal, also to, you know, in terms of people who are available. Let me remind folks again, because I saw some stuff on Saints page with people that you're responding to and just people in general. Ja Morant, Desmond Bain, and Jaren Jackson Jr. will be here for like 5 to 7 more years, if more. Please stop putting these guys in trade talks after, if you feel like they had a bad series. I've seen people talking about, oh, we need to trade Jaren because he had a bad, he played against Anthony Davis. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason. He's top 75 for a reason. I'm not excusing his series, but if he's going, I'd be more worried if he got outplayed by a scrub. Anthony Davis is no scrub. Those guys are going to be here, so please stop putting them guys in trade talks. And we're going to talk about it, obviously, with the takeaways of the presser, you know, the exit interviews. But Ja, Jaren, and Bane are clearly being, like, talked about as the guys, so they're not going nowhere. But if you're talking about anybody else on the team in terms of, you know, in deals, obviously I don't think Adams will go nowhere because he's hurt also, but you also still need him. BC, same thing, hurt. Luke's not going nowhere, depending on how they're talking about. Obviously, if there was, like you said, a deal, big deal, he'd go. But the way it sounds, based on the way they're talking, I don't think he's going nowhere.
I don't think he's going anywhere, especially because they just traded for him at the deadline. Yeah, I think that they're going to try to they want Luke to have a full offseason in the system, a training camp, all that. I think he's going to be there. Like, I don't think there's going to be, like, a complete roster overhaul. I think that there are some people that probably overreact a little bit. And I get it. It was a horrible way to lose in game 6. But you got to take a step back and realize, like, you can go back. It's so funny to think about it because, like, you look at LeBron on the other side. I remember when I was growing up where, like, LeBron having no rings was, like, the number one meme about the NBA, you know, because it takes time. It takes time to build teams that are able to win championships. It takes time for players to become championship level players, even if they do have great starts to their careers. A lot of it is about experience, you know, being ready for the moment and stuff like that. And I think that these losses are going to help them even more, like, next year, because it's like you have to know, it's almost like you have to know what it's like to lose like this in order for them to really come back and do that. And I think when you look at, like you said, Ja, Jaren, and Bane are going to be here for years, and we can kind of move to their postseason pressers too. I think all of them were saying the right things, especially I like Desmond Bane saying that he felt he needed to be more of a leader. And he also said he kind of wanted, I think he wants to be more like the heart and soul guy that Dylan has been. And I think he's going to try to take over a little bit more of that role. I think he did do a solid job of that, like, during some of the games in this series. I think just, like, especially when you look back to that game 5 and just coming out and just in attack mode, you know what I mean? And I think just him being, like, the heart and soul leader, being, like, the guy who's going to be, like, we're good. We might be down 10, we're good. We can come back. We've done this before. And I think him being that guy is going to be important. Ja talked about, you know, the trash talk stuff too. And I think that between him and Taylor Jenkins and kind of what they were talking about, I think you are going to see a more reserved Grizzlies team. Not to say they're not going to talk at all. Like, it's basketball. People are going to talk. There's going to be talking. But I think there's going to be more talking on the court and less talking, like, in post-game interviews and stuff with the media. Because as much as, you know, I write articles, I cover the team, all that media stuff. Like, I get it. Like, it's But there's a lot of people in the media who will take, like, you know, little snippets and little parts of your quote, and they'll run with that. And I think that that's something that they've learned. And it usually blows up when it's something like that. It doesn't blow up as much if you're talking when you're just on the court. So I think that's one thing that I'll see. There will be less talking in interviews. There's not going to be any fine in the West comments or anything like that, I don't think, coming up this year. And then, like you said with Taylor Jenkins, he said it's not even just about talking the talk and walking the walk. He was like, just go out there and play. And I think that's I don't want them to lose their edge, though. You know, I think it goes both ways. Like, I could see how maybe refraining from talking to the media a little bit more. Not to say you don't, you know, give the media answers, but maybe leaving the trash talk out of the media. But I don't want them to lose their edge when they're on the court. And I think that's going to be the big thing for them, is keeping that same edge while they're on the court, while also not garnering as much attention from the outside people just because of quotes that they've said, either whether it's post game, whether it's in the postseason presser, whether it's, you know, right after and you're still on the court and they're giving you an interview, just in all that kind of stuff, being a little bit better about what they give to the public, I think is going to change. I think internally and what they do on the court is going to be very similar, though. But I think that's going to be good for them just in general.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is kind of what they were not last year, not this past season or the season prior, but the season before when they were in the play-in and stuff like that. I mean, they talk, but like we didn't really hear any headlines about them like talking, like, but they were just doing it more so on the court. But obviously last year that kind of changed everything. But yeah, no. In terms of the presses you were talking about, Kleiman even mentioned Bane is the guy that, or one of the guys that be the heart and the soul. And I've always been a big proponent of that. Like, your best players lead the thing. Like, they're your leaders. I'm not saying your best player got to be your leader, but one of your best three players. Like, obviously with the Warriors, I mean, Steph and Clay and Draymond are leaders, but obviously they would, you know, sometimes they'll say, like, Draymond is the heart and soul, but I mean, he's one of your best players. You know what I mean? Like, so it's easier to say that versus a guy that is your fourth or fifth best player. Like, and a guy like for us with Dylan Brooks, this is hard, especially when it's a role player. So, with them just understanding, I think that's really one of the big takeaways from the exit interviews, is it just sounds like they're just challenging Ja, Jaren, and Bane to be those guys. Like, there's a clear pecking order being established. And I think I talked about it, maybe a month ago about it, like, in terms of, like, I'm big on you need a clear pecking order to, you know, to really be successful, because everybody else understands where their role is. Like, even if they don't know it yet, it'd be easier to know I'm not gonna be the guy. But I gotta fit in where I you know, where I'm most needed at. So it's easy because I think Kleiman even said, I think Ja said it, that basically Zach and Taylor Jenkins talked to them individually about being the leaders, those three guys, but also in front of the team, like saying, like, these are the guys, like these are the pillars, like basically like these, and they're challenging them to be the leaders of this team for however many years they're on this team. Because obviously Bane's going to get an extension. Nobody's worried about that. He said he's going to be fine, you know, or he's going to get one. You know, he didn't say it, but you know what I mean. Like, they can't say it, but Kleiman's like, we're going to probably try to sign him. Bane's like, you know, I can't say too much, but I'm excited. Like, you know, just
little, yeah. Like Desmond Bane is going to get, he's going to get a really good extension, especially when you look at and this is what I'll say, when you look at what Jordan Poole got last year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere similar to that, whether it's like 4 years, 100 million, 4 years, what, like something like that. I would not be surprised at all if he gets something like that. But we'll see what ends up happening. We know that there's also going to be a salary cap jump coming in the next couple of years too, with the new CBA and all that, new TV rights deals and everything with more money. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that affects it. But I think that he's going to get re-signed. He's going to be on the Grizzlies for a long time. I think, like you said earlier, I think Ja, Jaren, and Bane, barring, you know, barring something that is just completely unexpected, are going to be on the team for the foreseeable future. So, like, barring something unexpected, I mean, there's all, not to say it's impossible, because this is the NBA. We've seen crazy stuff happen before. But I think those three guys are going to be on the team for the foreseeable future. But I do want to talk about another thing, is when you look at just the team in general of the guys that we expect to be back, you know, the things that we want, like, certain players to improve on. And I'm going to start with, I think this is going to be the biggest thing, and it's not just one player. It's Ja and Jaren. They've got to figure out how to be, like, a pick-and-roll threat, like a pick-and-roll threat duo, just because I feel like they don't utilize that enough. And I know when Steven Adams is out there, Steven Adams is such a great screener, and I like using him out there to set screens as well. But even since Steven Adams has been out, I feel like they haven't gone to that enough. And I feel like in a playoff series, maybe against the Lakers, it wouldn't have been that great just because they do have a guy like Anthony Davis out there, so it would have been difficult to run it. But I think they need to get to the level where it doesn't matter if Anthony Davis is on the other side. It doesn't matter who's guarding you. You should be able to get to that. I think that them running a pick and roll together, especially because of how dynamic Jaren is too, where he can pick and pop, he can pick and roll. Maybe even if he can develop, I think Ja and Jaren also both need to work on making mid-range jumpers too. Just because whenever you see both of them, it's almost like, you know, with Ja, most of the time, if he doesn't shoot the ball off the catch, he's just going to drive to the basket. And, like, defenders know that. The like, NBA defenders are not worried about the Ja Morant mid-range jumper. I don't even know. I can't even tell. I can't even think of the last time I saw Jaren attempt a mid-range jumper. Like, I think he attempted one in, like, his first game of the season, maybe. I think when he came in, I think he shot they a mid-range. Were. But it's like, yeah, so it's like, I think he's another guy who, I mean, you look at Bam Adebayo, who is a really good mid-range shooter. Not to say he needs to be that level, but it's like every time that somebody's guarding Jaren, they know that he's either going to shoot it off the catch or he's going to drive to the basket. And whether that's he's going to post him up and go to the hook shot, or whether he's going to actually try to drive kind of like a big guard and like do some Euro step stuff, you know where he's going. You know that there's not really, he doesn't really have a pull-up game and stuff like that. I think that between Ja and Jaren, I think both of them working on those two aspects of the game, because we know Jaren can shoot too, and I think that's the other thing. We know that Jaren can shoot threes. I know he does have a little bit of a push shot, so maybe it would be more difficult to hit the mid-range, but I think it's something that he can definitely get better at along with Ja. I think both of them can get much better in that aspect, and I think that can help them. I think it'll also extend Ja's career a lot too. I know that he hasn't had any like major injuries or anything that luckily, but you know, continuing to jump and try and, you know, going over LeBron like he did in that playoff game, like that's dangerous. And even if it's not major injuries, it can be little injuries that holds you out for a week. Like we saw last year against the Warriors, you know, that wasn't a major injury. He probably could have came back and played if the Grizzlies had advanced to the next round, but a week in the playoffs is like three games, and those three games are the difference in your season. So I think that's something that's going to be important is him. And he talked about it too, like staying available and staying ready. And I think that's something that he is just going to have to continue to work on, continue to kind of lock into going forward as well.
Yeah. Taylor Jenkins was talking about all this in terms of like the Ja and Jaren pick and roll. I mean, they ran it before. They ran it a lot in Jaren's second year and Ja's first year when Jaren was like a 40% shooter. Like, I got a clip. I think I'll even post it, like, under, like, when this gets posted. It was a clip against Minnesota. They ran, they spammed the mess out of Ja and Jaren pick and roll, and they literally got a good ass shot out of it every time. And even this year, when they do it, they got to get a shot at it, or they got a shot out of it every time. I think more so for them, it's about Jenkins running it more so than Ja and Jaren. I mean, and granted, they got to be better too. Jaren's got to be better screening in terms of setting screens. Ja's got to be more patient on screens. And what you're talking about with Ja getting injured and shooting more, I think Ja really particularly needs to shoot more mid-range shots. I think Jaren could, but I think it's definitely more prevalent for Ja because of how he plays and just shoot more floaters, but really just being smarter because he's done it before. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys have done a lot of things we talk about, but they need to be consistent. And that's really the real big thing with Ja. He needs to be consistent more in that. But Jenkins was talking about basically he has to understand, he understood that he needs to improve his schemes, because even Josh said it. The offense needs more variety, the way he plays and this and that. And Jenkins even said, like, I need to run more stuff for Ja and Jaren in terms of their pick and roll. But also he's just saying basically he needs to build this offense around Ja, Jaren, and Bane. Because I think that's really the prevalent thing that we saw this year not only with them, but like you were talking about with Steven Adams. And I think that's a big, not conundrum, but like not an issue, because I think Adams still has value, but you're featuring him too much more so than your guys. Like Adams, because you got to think, no disrespect to Adams, but if Adams doesn't get hurt, then Clark doesn't get hurt. Do we see Jaren take this leap, you know, for where they have to force him, force feed him to get the ball, where when you got Adams on the floor, they're just going to spam pick and rolls with him. You know, so now they're starting to realize they got to run this stuff to the best players. And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops personally in terms of the wish list. I mean, I mean, you know, for guys, like, I mean, obviously Jai, I want him to work on a mid-range floater, get into that, you know, just any type of shooting. Obviously Jaren getting his offense right, like the same, you know, being more consistent in what he do. Bane, the same thing, because, I mean, we saw Bane shoot mid-range jump shots. For real, for me, really Bane getting healthy, because he did talk about his toe injury being like, still needs to be addressed. They got to talk to doctors and things. So if he doesn't need surgery, I mean, I expect him to get better. But if he does need surgery, he obviously won't have an offseason. But I think personally, what we saw from Bane, if he's just healthy, pre-toe injury Bane, oh my goodness. Like, if he's healthy like that, then you're talking about a guy that's like 24 points per game. So, yeah, it sounded like all of them understood what needed to be, you know, what needs to happen this offseason. Like, they're just challenging Jaren and Bane to be leaders, but also just be better on the floor. But Jenkins understands that he needs to be better with his schemes and building around them. And Kleiman does too, in terms of he needs to understand, like he said, like we talked about earlier, he doesn't want to triple down on youth. He sounded like he said he's going to be aggressive in the trade market. So, like, there's a lot of self-awareness, obviously, outside of maybe the person we talked about for a little bit with Dylan Brooks. But God, the franchise, or they understand this is a big offseason. And for me, that's what I meant by mindset shift. It's not really, they got to, like you said, they don't have to do a whole roster overhaul. They don't have to do too many different things. Just little shifts and tweaks here and there. Like in the roster, there might be three spots I want replaced. Maybe Dylan, Conchar, Tyus. Like those three spots for the three names I said. And I mean, everything else will take care of itself. Everybody be healthy and things of that nature. So it's not all doom and gloom for the Grizzlies. Like this is the same team that won 50 games back-to-back years. Has made the playoffs, but where are we at now? 3 years in a row? Yeah, 3 years in a row they made the playoffs. You have a core of basically one dude being an All-NBA guy, top 15 player in this league, or top 20 player at worst in Ja Morant. You have literally the defensive player of the year, one of the second youngest defensive player of the year in Jaren Jackson Jr., and you have another dude who could make an all-star team. And there's Desmond Bane, and he's one of the best shooters in the league. Like, most teams would love to have that core. Now it's about building around that core. That's really about building around that core, and also that core taking the next step in their maturity and just their game. And it's going to happen. Like, most, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, I know people are mad about the loss and people clown on the Grizzlies, but I promise you, they're going to get things right. It's going to, a year from now, we're going to have hopefully a different discussion about the Grizzlies. This is going to be in a better place than what it is now. I know it seems doom and gloom, but I promise you, this is not the worst thing that could happen. We could be way worse. We could be, I don't want to name no teams, but we could be some other teams in this league that got no direction or are in the middle and, nah, this is not that. The team they talked about wanting to get humble got humble. Now they're about to bounce back and understand, like, okay, like they understand what needs to happen. So, that works in, you know, the Grizzlies' favor, fans, all that. So, you know, people should be, I'm not going to say sleeping well. I mean, I'm going to sleep well, but like people should be all right. People should feel comfortable. People should feel all right. Especially
it's going to be good. Well, this is what I'll say is that if they come back next year, And this is what I would be saying if I was, like, on the coaching staff for the GMs and telling the players, like, if y'all come back next year and you go to the Western Conference Finals or you win it all or something like that, nobody is going to remember this. Like, nobody's going to care about the first – like, Michael Jordan lost in the first round. Nobody ever talks about that because he won six championships, right? Nobody's going to remember the first round exit that you had in your fourth or fifth season if you go on to – become a team that, you know, wins it all or even wins multiple down the line. And I think with the core they have together, they definitely have a chance to do that. And I think that's like the thing that everybody should still be taking away. Like they have the guys that are capable of doing it in the future. And like, keep in mind, this Lakers team, as much as like they were a playing team, and we talked about it, like without Brandon Clark and Steven Adams, it was a bad matchup for them. Like, there's not a question. It was a bad matchup for him, and you got to play two guys on the NBA All-75 team, you know. And when you really look at it, they've lost to like at worst two, like in the last 2 years, you know, you lose to Steph Curry and LeBron James. That's another thing you can take away, is you can say, could they have been better? Yes. Could they have won the series? Yes. But it's not like they lost a 7-game series to the Houston Rockets. You know what I mean? Or something like that. And this Lakers team also isn't a regular 7-seeded team either. Most 7-seeds don't have it's top 75 players recognized by the NBA on it. And one of them being the NBA's all-time leading scorer, regardless of how old they are. So, yeah. It's actually, no 7-seed has ever had the NBA's all-time leading scorer, to be exact. So, this is something that's never happened before. So that's, It's kind of crazy when you think about it like that. So, right, final takeaways, right? It was a bad loss. It was an eye-opening loss. I think that is something the GMs, like the Zach Kleiman and the rest of the team, and they're going to take it going into the draft. We're going to see if they even draft anybody. They might not draft anybody. That draft pick is probably going to be traded. I wouldn't be surprised. Right. There might be a second-round rookie, but I feel like that first round pick is probably not going to be here. That Warriors pick next year is about to get shipped out of here too. So like that's the other thing, man. As much like shout out to David Roddy, shout out to Kenneth Lofton Jr. You know, shout out even Jake LaRavey. I know he was hurt. Shout out to those guys. Shout out to Kennedy Chandler. Shout out Vince Williams Jr. All the rookies. Hey, shout out to them for finishing your first year in the NBA. Proud of them for that. But they don't need any more rookies, man. They don't need any more rookies. The contending teams don't have 5 rookies. And as much as I've always been the optimistic guy, right? I'm always the optimist. I think that all of those guys I just named have a chance to one day be solid players. Yep. But is it going to be next year? Probably not. And the Grizzlies need guys that are going to be ready next season. Right, I think that's what we need to see. We need to the mindset shift of this is a rebuilding team to this is a contending team, you know, because we're about to be in, as crazy as it is to say, we're almost in year 5 or year 4, Ja. Like it's getting crazy, it's getting ridiculous.
I'll say it's year 4 of the trio. Like
yeah.
Year 4, it'll be the year 4 of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I count it in my head. Because they haven't missed the playoffs since they all been together. So, that's how I kind of view it. So, yeah, this will be year. And they'll all be, like, soon off their rookie contracts, too. So, like, you're basically getting everybody.
So, it's going to be interesting with how the cap space and stuff works out. They haven't announced all NBA yet. But I don't, based on the trackers and stuff, I don't think Ja's going to make it. So, even though, you know, that is very tough for Ja to miss out on that money, it also is going to save the Grizzlies some cap space down the line. So that could be something that could be a blessing in disguise because, you know, Ja's still going to get his money. It's not like he's not still going to be making over $30 million a year or something like that. But it's going to save him. Like, hey, that $5 or $6 million in a season can be a big difference. Obviously, you wish that he could have made it for him and all that. But it's something, like I said, it could be a blessing in disguise down the stretch. It could be something that saves them, and maybe they can add a player that they wouldn't have been able to in 3 or 4 years. And Jaren Jackson Jr. is on a declining contract, ladies and gentlemen. In 2025, that man is going to be, if not the best two-way player in the NBA, he's going to be top 3 two-way players in the NBA by then. In my opinion, maybe not, but he has the potential to be that, and he's going to be making $23 million a year. So, like the way that the team is set up for the next few seasons, they are going to be like this is not the last 51 season for this trio. It's not going to be the last playoff loss either. Like they're not going to win the championship every year for the rest of the year career, but. I think this is something where they're going to come out next season from the jump and they're going to be locked in. And hopefully, this is the number one thing I'll say is next year, can we please break the Game 1 at home curse? Just got to do it. Got to break it. That's going to be the number one thing. If they can do that next year, I'll be confident in their ability to move on through the playoffs. They got to break the Game 1 at home curse. because you can't 0-3 in game ones at home now. It's hard to win series when you're starting down 0-1 at home. Like, it's really going to come down. Like, dude, if you get home court advantage, you got to win game one. And hopefully this will be the last time that they worry about that. And they can get that going next year. But we're going to be with y'all the whole offseason when it comes to the draft, when it comes to summer league. Going to have a lot of episodes. Probably not going to be every single week just because there's not going to be games anymore. So it might get a little bit repetitive if we did that. But, you know, when it comes to draft time, when it comes to free agency, when it comes to the summer league, when it comes to training camp and all that going into next year, obviously we're going to still be here giving you guys all the Grizzlies content. But shout out to everybody who listened to the first basically full season of the Next Gen podcast. Started this kind of like, I guess, September, October. So really good to finally get that all the way through for the first season. Got a lot of new listeners throughout the year. So shout out to everybody who joined this year and everybody who has joined and become a Bluff City Media Insider this year. For me and Alex, thank y'all for a great season, and we'll see y'all in the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Next Gen Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a like and a comment wherever you download your podcasts. Head over to www.bluffcitymedia.co, where you will find comprehensive coverage of all things Memphis sports and how you can become an insider. We'll see you back here next time.